Happy Saturday, folks. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. I must apologize for the last 2 weeks. I'll tell you what, the website's been giving us fits. We've been trying to reformat it. You're not going to see that for a few weeks, but we have it to the point where it's ready to go. And obviously, since you're listening to this show, we have it to the point where we can actually bring you a new show. But the website is complicated because of all the articles we post and the archives, which are immense. Those are immense volumes. Think about 4 years of shows, many of them national interviews. I hope you like the stand-in show we put in last week, which many of you new listeners probably had never heard. And if you haven't, you should, because it's kind of timeless. Claire Lopez, CIA operative, very high mucky-muck in the anti-terrorism, shall we say, legions, and probably knows more about jihad than just about any American living. And I interviewed her several times. This was one of the interviews. Listen to last week's show. I think you'll enjoy it. And you'll see, that was in 2013. You'll have retrospect with which to look at that show. She was right on. I mean, she was right on as to what's going on right now. So, without further ado, since we've lost literally 2 weeks on new shows here, between having the difficulty getting them posted, no internet in Wyoming, the website being redesigned, holy smokes, it was like all at once. Yeehaw. Hopefully we are over that hump. So we're going to get started. This week's show, which is a amalgamation of what I wanted to do last week and this week, we're going to be talking a little bit about Obama, who, as you know, is gutting the military on purpose. But it goes even deeper. I mean, he is politicizing the military. For those of you who listened, who took my advice and listened to Bret Baier's show on Fox News, this is 2 weeks ago, which was about gutting the military, you know, forcing ROTC students to wear pink high heels so that they could be like gender cognizant. I mean, who knows? It's just unbelievable. But it goes even more, folks. We're going to talk about Obama just naming a Navy warship outside the Navy guidelines. We're going to talk about the VA department and medical records, which, you know, after spending over $1 billion of our money, that's yours and mine, medical records for vets, so these guys who gave their life and limb to defend us can at least go in and register for treatment. Absolutely outrageous. And we're going to talk a little bit about terror. In fact, there's an article, it's from a week ago, I believe, 418, actually, in Daily Sanity. And guess what the title is? Yes, what Obama just did is treasonous. See? I was the first to start using that word, treason and traitor. But more and more media are picking that up. Even on the mainstream media, you're now getting some pundits who, you know, they almost say the word and they kind of dance around it. Well, that it is what it is. Okay, he's a traitor and it is treasonous and he is anti-American. He is the commander-in-chief of ISIS, not America. So we're going to be talking about that, and we're going to be talking about a few facts you don't know about what the terror that's going on in the Middle East, particularly in Israel. And then we're going to talk about, as I promised last week, Obamacare. Because Obamacare, folks, is in its death spiral. Now, I predicted this when it was first passed, I mean within a few months of it first passing, and a lot of people poo-pooed it and la-di-da-di-da. But the bottom line is Obamacare is on the ropes. And insurers are beginning to leave the pools and leave the exchanges, including United Healthcare, the country's largest insurer, who announced last week, actually the beginning of the week before last, that they were done. They weren't taking any new Obamacare nothings. They were losing too much money. And all these companies are in the same boat. Now, what Obama is trying to do is to use your money to pay their losses. In other words, additional expense to the American taxpayer. So we're going to go into that. And we're going to talk about, we're going to talk a little bit about oil. Okay? This is a segment I've been wanting to bring to you for a while. In fact, 3 weeks ago, we ran out of time, if you remember. But we're going to go over today for sure because oil is on the march. It is rising. All those guys who said it was going to go to $10 a barrel and $15 a barrel, if you remember, yours truly, go back to the beginning of the year, I said higher oil by the end of this year, and it is happening even earlier than I anticipated. I'm going to tell you why and what you can expect, because that is a major expense for you and your family or your business, and it's going to affect the economy across the board. All that money that we have been saving for the last, 6, 8 months, 9 months, 10 months, when oil, kind of crashed, all that money is not going to be available anymore. Not only is it going to affect your household, but your household is going to spend less along with every other household, and that's going to affect the economy, which is going to have even greater effect on your household. So we're going to talk about that. If we have time today, and I'm not sure we will, I'm going to read you a little bit more from the American Thinker article. I've read you several excerpts. There's a couple more paragraphs here, which would be great to close the show with if we have time. And I'm going to also try and talk to you a little bit about Alexander Tyler. He was a Scottish history professor at the University of Edinburgh. And he talked about the life cycles of democracies and the stages that they went through. And then there's another professor, Professor Emeritus Joseph Olson of the Hamline University School of Law in St. Paul, Minnesota, who did a study, which is very apropos to the upcoming election, over the number of states, square miles of land, etc., which were won by Obama and Romney back in 2012. But nonetheless, the outcome was Obama. So what those two professors have to say tie into one another. Trust me on that. Okay, let's get started, shall we? First of all, let's start with Obama's ransacking of the military, not only in terms of hardware, not only in terms of weaponry, not only in terms of new weapon systems, not only in terms of manpower and women power, not only in terms of social nonsense, the whole don't ask, don't tell thing he overthrew despite all his generals saying not to. The ROTC students who have to wear pink high heels for a day so that they understand the proper anti-rape mentality. Wow, unbelievable. So Obama just named a warship. This was 2 weeks ago. Okay. This is a new frigate. One of the very few, by the way, coming off the line, because we are net cutting ships, not building ships. And Navy Secretary Ray Mabus, who's an Obama appointee, imagine that. Isn't this a big surprise? He announced that the Arleigh Burke-class guided missile destroyer was going to be named after liberal politician Carl Levin. Now, I don't know if you folks remember, some of you probably do, Carl Levin, flaming liberal, absolutely anti-military. In fact, this is the senator who served on the committee that gutted the Navy. Let's go over this again. We're going to name one of the few new ships coming off the line or coming on the line after the senator who gutted the Navy. Not only this, Mabus, who is the Obama appointee, I mean, do any of these people, are they able to think for themselves, or is it just something in the water there in Washington? I don't know. Are they injected with something like, Obama shoves a needle up their neck? I will do whatever he says. I will do whatever he says. It's just unbelievable. Let me put this in context, okay? Carl Levin presided over a cutback in the United States military, including and particularly the Navy, to the extent now that all military experts, there is no exception, left, right, in between, doesn't matter what, America is no longer capable of fighting a two-front war or two wars in two separate hemispheres. Now, think about all the threats that are going on out there. We have the Mideast. We have Russia. We have Russia incursions into Europe and the NATO lands. We have Israel and the surrounding Arab states, the Palestinians, the whole nine yards. We have all sorts of stuff blowing up in Africa, which is going to be a future show that you never hear about this on mainstream media. Africa is a mess. And we're going to wind up there. In fact, we already have, although you can't hear this on the mainstream media, troops there. You bet. And I don't mean the 3,000 he sent over there to handle Ebola. I mean fighting troops in Africa. And that's just the tip of the spear, folks, because that's going to be another huge battleground in the future. Not only for the hearts and minds of people, not only Western civilization against jihad, but also Western civilization capitalism against communism. And it's all about natural resources. China is in there big time over the last 5, 6, 7 years. Russia is expanding its influence. I mean, it's the age old. All right. So, you know, there are guidelines for naming ships in the Navy. In fact, you know who set up the guidelines, put them in writing? That's right. This same Secretary of the Navy, Mabus. His guidelines, by the way, were that the guidelines, well, basically, Navy ships will be named after men and women who served in the armed forces. Carl Levin did not. And Carl Levin, in addition to presiding over the gutting of the military, Carl Levin does not ascribe to Mabus's own guidelines that he published in 2012-2013 whatsoever. Not even a little bit. 200 Congressional Medal of Honors were passed over in naming this ship. A number of Navy secretaries, also part of the guidelines, were passed over in naming this ship. Now, you're going to really love this. But there was only one other ship, by the way, in the entire century before this that did not ascribe to the Navy guidelines for naming battleships, you know, ships of battle. And that was the USS Winston Churchill. Now, I think that's probably an acceptable exception, don't you think? The USS Carl Levin, who Mabus, at the naming, at the christening ceremony, called an American hero. An American hero? An American hero who didn't even serve in the military? This is like the Bo Bergdahl BS in the Rose Garden. He served with honor and distinction, Susan Rice and President Obama told us. He's now being court-martialed for treason, consorting with the enemy, and desertion. And they knew it at the time. It's the same thing. The same thing. By the way, upcoming is going to be a battle royal in Congress. Congress is really pissed off over this naming, by the way. Particularly the military people. Military vets who serve in Congress. So, Secretary Mabus now wants to name the next U.S. warship to come online. You're going to love this. After Union activist Cesar Chavez. The USS Cesar Chavez, who, by the way, never served in the military either. So, that's what we have going on the political front, the politicization, blah, 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 of the military by Mr. Obama and crew. Now, moving right into the next story, we have the VA, right? The VA, as we know, is a wreck. We know nobody's been fired. We know vets are dying. Vets are not getting treatment. Vets are waiting months for treatment and pain and suffering, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. One of the reasons is the VA can't seem to get their computer systems working. Now, maybe I'm not one to talk about this after the last 2 weeks on the right side, but considering that, you know, we spent a few $1,000s redoing the website, which is a complicated little website for what we do, the VA has spent over $1 billion of your money, and they can't yet get it to work so that, let's say, a VA hospital in Virginia can contact a VA hospital or go into the general VA medical records for John Doe soldier and find them and get them complete and get them accurate. which means that they can't check John Doe in for treatment because they don't have access to his records. And I don't think we want our vets having to have like their own computer disk with their own records on it. I think that's going to get a little outrageous. Or maybe they should carry a voluminous file in their trucks and cars that they can wheel in on their entire medical records when they check into a VA for treatment. What do you think? This is unbelievable. I mean, unbelievable. And then, of course, you have the employees in Phoenix. By the way, I must correct an error I just made. It's not $1 billion they have spent on this computer system that does not work. It is $2 billion they have spent on this computer system that does not work. And that is on top of the $1.3 billion they spent on a failed upgrade 2 years ago. This has been going on for almost the entire presidency of Barack Hussein, traitor Obama. It's just unbelievable. This is the same president who told us that he was going to get to the bottom of this right away and he was going to fix it. So much for that. Okay. The next thing we're going to talk about is terror. Now, I don't know if you know this, but Kerry, Sop Kerry, our spineless, milquetoast excuse for a Secretary of State who does the bidding of Obama and Susan Rice in everything he does and says some of the most outrageous things imaginable, has been all over Israel over the past 4 weeks about, you know, toning down their response to terror and, you know, trying to treat the Palestinians with love and respect and refraining from attacking Hezbollah and Hamas even after repeated terror attacks. I want to put this in perspective for you. And you think about what would be happening in this country if this country was subject to the types of terror and to the types and to the sustained attack on every aspect of its civilian population by, let's say, Canada or let's say Mexico. Well, actually, let's not say Mexico because that's kind of true, right? Mexico does have a sustained attack on everything American, including the health, safety, and welfare of American families every single day because of the open border policy of Barack Hussein, Obama, and crew, which Hillary, by the way, wants to continue and expand. Palestinian terrorists, to put this in perspective for you, have executed over 300, that's 300, deadly knife attacks in the last year. In the last year, 300 knife attacks. This doesn't count blowing up buses. This doesn't count the occasional rifle and or pistol attack. This is knife attacks, which Hamas and Hezbollah has extorted their followers to launch in a jihad. In fact, there's even online video. You can't make this up. There's even online video, which is the best ways to kill a Jew. And they recommend stabbing them in the neck, close up, so that Allah can watch. Look, guys and girls, this is outrageous. This is a point in time where Western civilization, if it does not hold together, you know, what did Patrick Henry say? divided we stand, united we fall, or whatever that happened, whatever that saying was. It's very famous. It doesn't come to mind right now. But the bottom line is, is that if Western civilization does not stand and stand together right now, there's not going to be a Western civilization. And of course, Obama, with his, will be very kind, will say, Muslim-leaning sympathies, shall we, to be really kind. He's doing everything he can to make sure Western civilization does not stand and does not stand united. And one of the prime examples is the way America treats Israel under this administration. Despite Israel suffering 300 terror attacks with knives in the last year, That's almost, if you add the terror attacks that have to do with weapons, the terror attacks that have to do with bombs or some other type of attack on Israeli citizens. It's rarely Israeli troops. It's Israeli citizens. It's your neighbors, the equivalent of your neighbors. And we chastise Israel, right? It just lets you, it's just unbelievable. I think Israel is so relieved that Barack Obama is going to be out of office here shortly. They can't even, they don't know what to do. They'll probably have a party in Tel Aviv. All right, along those lines, I was telling you about this article in Daily Sanity. Yes, what Obama did is treasonous. Okay. So, number one, you have probably heard something about the 28 pages of the 9/11 Commission, you know, that studied the terror attack on 9/11, had a number of recommendations, almost none of which, by the way, Obama has implemented, because remember, he really cares about you, but almost none of which Obama has implemented. And these 28 pages seem to indicate that the Saudis, in some way, shape, or form, through their embassy here or otherwise, had some complicity in the 9/11 attacks, whether it was funding some of the hijackers of the planes, giving them shelter and support, or facilitating their illegal travel. Remember, five of them were on overstayed visas. Another three had, quote-unquote, immigrated to this country illegally, i.e., illegal aliens. By the way, those are two words which the Department of Homeland Security has just banned from its lexicon. You are no longer allowed to call illegal aliens illegal aliens. The Saudis, by the way, and there's something to this rumor, because the Saudis are up in arms over the release of these 28 pages that are classified in the 9/11 report. In fact, they are so up in arms over it, no pun intended, that they are threatening to sell their 750 billion holdings in United States Treasury notes and bonds, which of course would just ransack the American market. If you remember, about 6 months ago I did a show, and I warned you that Saudi Arabia was facing tremendous internal pressure, that pressure was mounting because of the deal that Barack Hussein Obama, Barry Baby, did with Iran, Saudi Arabia's mortal enemy, not only in terms of a geopolitical enemy and a rival state and a rival, shall we say, kingpin of the Mideast, but because Saudi Arabia is Sunni and Iran is Shia. So you have the age-old, centuries, well, millennium-old rift between Sunni and Shia at play, in addition to what you would normally consider to be materially hostile to one another nation states. Now, for the Saudis to tell America that if you release these 28 pages, we're going to A, sell all our treasuries, and B, what they haven't said, is abandon the peg of the rial, the Saudi currency, to the American dollar. I warned you of this, folks, sometime around December or January. If you type it in, Saudi rial or U.S. dollar, Saudi Arabia, that show will probably come up. You should listen to it, because that's one of the things you're not seeing in the media, but that's also part of this threat. And the two things together could really wreak havoc on not only the U.S. dollar, but on the U.S. economy and the U.S. stock market. So, once again, it affects you, your household, what you pay for goods and services. And it also affects what we're going to be talking about toward the end of the show in the segment about oil prices rapidly rising, rapidly rising. So I want you to pay attention to that, because the American media, they're fixated on Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. And I think they're fixated on them on purpose. Number one, of course, they have their political agenda. But that's not all. They don't want you to be thinking about these other things, you understand. Because when you're thinking, you're dangerous. When you're entertained and not thinking, they're happy. Now, at the same time that all this has been going on with Saudi Arabia and the 28 pages and the Saudi threats over releasing 28 pages, at the same time, Barack Hussein Obama, Barry Baby, has been using the cover of all this news, the elections, the political stuff that's going on, the Republicans and the Democrats, and you know, the Saudi Arabian diversion on the 28 pages and all the other crud, to further his agenda, to assist what we consider the enemy and what he considers the brave freedom fighters fighting against colonial powers. By the way, you know, I got an email. I'm going to digress for just a second. I got an email about a month and a half ago. I never brought it up during one of the shows, but I'm going to today because it's right on point. And the email was from, I would say, probably a liberal person who held some conservative beliefs, you know, kind of a left of center moderate liberal, or a right of center moderate liberal. And the email basically questioned me. It questioned me on Guantanamo, because my stand is, hey, not only do you need to enhance Guantanamo, you need to capture people, you need to bring them there, it needs to be a full-throated prison population, and you need to be able to tap that source of intelligence. And I got an email from this person saying, oh, this is, you know, blah, 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 blah. I want you to know that 2 weeks ago, Barack Obama, under cover of all this other crap that's going on, released 9 more terrorists. Now, think about what I just told you about Saudi Arabia. Think about the fact that Saudi Arabia is now clearly implicated in some way, shape, or form in 9/11. Think about how much money the Saudi Arabia and the Wahhabi sect, you know, kind of extreme jihadists, extreme Islamists, the funding of the mosques in America, which is part of the shows I've been doing over the last month, the funding of Islamic extremism around the world. Now it appears the funding, at worst, aid, comfort, and abetting, at best, of the 9/11 terrorism attack here in the United States. Guess where these 9 Guantanamo detainees, who, by the way, the Department of Defense has said since inception were too dangerous to release, they will kill Americans. Guess where they're being sent? By Obama and Susan Rice and Ben Rhodes and the pathetic excuse we have for the National Security Council. That's right, Saudi Arabia. So Saudi Arabia is going to watch over the Guantanamo terrorist force. That includes a guy like by the name of Ahmed Umar Abdullah Al-Hakimi. He was released, he was released on or about April 14th or 15th, 2 weeks ago. When the Pentagon conducted a review of the few remaining terrorists in custody, now that Obama's been running amok with the releases, they labeled him high risk and highly likely to reengage in terrorism if given the chance. And they specifically recommended this guy, and by the way, 7 of the 9 that were just released, for continued detention under Department of Defense control. Huh. Well, you know, what does the Department of Defense know? And, of course, we can't be bothered with stuff that might harm America's enemy and therefore, at the very least, an ally of Obama's for whom he harbors great sympathy. I'm being just as kind as I can on this. So that's what's been happening behind the scenes to keep you and your family safe and secure. Don't you feel better? All right, we're going to talk about now Obamacare, which I was going to talk about last week until we had our no internet in Wyoming, website not working, yada, 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 nonsense going on. All right, United Health. Here's what's going on. I may bring you an interview in the next 3 or 4 weeks. If this person can do the interview and not fear losing her job. But this is a very experienced person in the pharmacy industry, you know, pharmaceuticals. And what she has to say about what's going on with Obamacare, drugs, the cost of drugs, the dispensing of drugs, and the overall deleterious, that is, materially adverse effect Obamacare is having on healthcare and your pocketbook all rolled into one, so that drug companies and others who were in on the passage of Obamacare with legislative bribes so that they can make more money, you will wretch. So I'm hoping she's going to agree to come on, but I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to ask somebody to put their job in jeopardy by doing so either. What's happening right now, though, is United Healthcare, the largest insurer in the country and the largest single, should we say, insurer that enrolls Obamacare enrollees, a member of the exchanges, is pulling out of Obamacare. A number of other insurers say they're going to also. Larry Levitt, he's an expert in health law, as a matter of fact, at the Kaiser Family Foundation, says, quote, either insurers will drop out or insurers will raise premiums, unquote. I want you to know that insurers across the board, folks, are yelling and screaming about losing money on their Obamacare plans. Okay, and United Health is the first to drop out and the largest there is, but they're going to be followed by others. Mark my words on this. Okay, or the losses the insurance companies are suffering, and I'll explain why in just a moment, are going to be made up by the United States taxpayer, which is what Obama wants to do. He wants to gloss it over, use more of our money, break more of the American piggy bank, and keep this thing going. That's what he wants to do. You know, it's kind of like you're building a house, and it sinks into a sinkhole, and you decide to keep the construction going at the bottom of the sinkhole. It's kind of like that. It's the best analogy I can come up with, a spur of the moment off the top of my poor little Wyoming hayseed head. The collapse of the market, known as Obamacare, is known and is being called now a death spiral. In other words, the less insurers there are, the more money the insurers who remain are going to lose, and the higher the premiums are going to have to charge, which is the less people who are going to enroll, which is the more money they're going to lose. Got that? It's a death spiral. And remember that promise that Barry gave us all? You can keep your doctor, you can keep your hospital, you can keep your policy, and it's all going to go down $2,500 a year? BS. As we all know, rates on health insurance have increased anywhere from 17 to 48% a year, depending upon what state you are in. We all know this, right? We can all do math. 2 plus 2 is 4. Well, the only way these companies are going to be able to stay in these marketplaces and at least prolong the death spiral, if not totally avoid it, is to raise premiums again, folks. I'm here to tell you that your health insurance premium is absolutely going to go up between 15 and 30% over the next 12 months, probably right after the election. Imagine that. So you better plan for it. And in concert with the already rapidly rising oil prices, which are going to go even much higher, you're going to have a lot less disposable income. You might want to start preparing for that right now, you folks. You know, trying to shut the barn door after the horse is out doesn't work too good. Unlike the United States, you can't print money. There was a report. Well, number one, Blue Cross Blue Shield, right? A lot of us are on that. Blue Cross Blue Shield just released a report. This is last month, March. It said new enrollees under Obamacare had 22% higher medical costs than people who receive coverage from employers. Another report by McKinsey and Company, big healthcare kind of study tank, think tank deal, and apolitical. They're not left, right. I mean, they just report the facts. Reported and projected, and the CBO projected, that 9 million more people are going to lose their work-based insurance coverage over the next 2 to 3 years. 9 million more. There's already been about 6.5 million. Now, to put this in perspective, the 15.5 million folks who, according to these studies, have the cheapest and best health care around, that is, employer-based health care, they're going to lose their policies. The people who have been added to the Obamacare rolls, the government says it's 18 million. I don't trust the government, but let's take their number. More than 70% of that 18 million, using their figures, is in Medicaid. They've been enrolled through Medicaid. And here's the problem, folks. The problem is, this pharmacist, if she'll come on, will tell you all about it in much better terms than I can. The problem is that these Medicaid people cannot even get enough coverage to buy basic drugs. Part of that is because drugs have risen so much, and part of that is because of all the goodies that Obama gave them to support Obamacare when it was struggling to be born. In addition, more than 70% of doctors now will not take Medicaid patients, or Medicaid patients in most circumstances, because the reimbursements that they get for providing the services to a Medicaid patient does not even cover their costs. And remember, many of these doctors have $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 student loan bills to pay off and education bills to pay off. I mean, do you kind of see how this is, why the insurance industry is beginning to call this a death spiral? There is nothing good going on having to do with Obamacare. Zero. And those of you who are out there right now going, oh, yes, but pre-existing conditions. Folks, you don't have to have Obamacare to have pre-existing conditions covered. You don't have to have Obamacare to get your $10 a month birth control pill if that happens to be your feminist deal. You don't have to have Obamacare. You can have a system that actually works that can do the same thing and give you the same protections. Do you understand? This is a system that does not work that gives you the protections. It needs to be replaced by a system that does work that gives you the protections. This shouldn't be that difficult to grasp. Or, in the end, you're not going to have any system at all. Do you get that? Wow. All right. The McKinsey & Company report, by the way, also found that in the individual markets, you know, the Obamacare marketplaces in each of the, well, where they're still in existence, a number have folded, where they're still in existence, insurers lost money. Listen to this. Insurers lost money in 41 states in 2014 and were only profitable in 9 states. Think about that. 75% of the states, the pools, the exchanges, the insurers are losing money. And we're not talking about shekels. We're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars. Quote, "We continue to have serious concerns about the sustainability of the public exchanges." That's Mark Bertolini. He's the CEO of Aetna. And he said it just in February. Aetna is another huge insurer in the pools. Okay, he's concerned about the risk pool, the balance of healthy and sick enrollees in a plan. Remember I gave you that quote from Blue Cross saying 22% higher medical costs overall in the pool under Obamacare than in the normal work-based pool? Okay. Quote, this is the Aetna CEO, "The clearest remedy for the loss is for insurers to raise premiums, perhaps by large amounts." You think he's trying to tell us something, folks? You think he's just like having coffee with the boys and saying that for fun? Quote, The industry is clearly setting the stage for bigger premium increases in 2017, the Kaiser Family Foundation study. Michael Taggart, another kind of high mucky muck, he's a consultant with S&P Dow Jones Indices. He pointed to data from his firm showing that per capita costs for insurers are spiking, in other words, reaching all-time highs, which means their losses are reaching all-time highs in every Obamacare marketplace that has not yet folded. Quote, "We made a significant change in the rules with the ACA, that's the Affordable Care Act, and we're still working through the process to see how the market stabilizes." And Taggart said that at a panel. Is a death spiral a possibility? Sure, it's a possibility. I wouldn't attempt to put a probability on it because I think there are a lot of things going on," unquote. Let me decipher that for you. The death spiral's underway. They don't know what to say, they don't know what to do, and they don't know how to stop it. Okay? I just kind of boiled down all the political nonsense for you. Now, one of the things that I think you want to keep in mind with this this whole, should we say the Obamacare debacle, which is unfolding right now, which, by the way, was predicted by anybody who can do math, and anybody who knows anything about healthcare, and who wasn't concerned and who is concerned about healthcare and not the politics of the healthcare. I want you to understand that this government is concerned about the politics of healthcare, not the healthcare. That's why it doesn't work. Politics does not add 2 + 2 and get 4, okay? But the world, reality, adds 2 + 2 and gets 4. And when the reality hits the politics, things fall apart. We have seen that on every level in every way. So here's another quote. This is from Levitt again. "What we're likely to see is more of a market correction than any kind of death spiral." This is them saying, we're going to raise rates up the butt. And that's how we're going to try and stop this death spiral. There are enough people enrolled at this point that the market is sustainable. Quote, you're going to love this last part of this quote. "The premiums are just too low." Remember that promise? $2,500. Right? I'm going to save you $2,500 when this passes. Okay, we're all now spending anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000 more for our health costs, and we're being told by independent think tanks, insurance company executives, government people, the whole nine yards, in a whole bunch of ways, that premiums are going to rapidly spike again, or guess what? You're not going to have a health care plan. Companies are needing to adjust to the new system. This is Dr. Mandy Cohen. She is kind of a left-leaning, she's the chief operating officer of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Okay, she's a government gal, appointed, by the way, during the Obama administration. She said there's absolutely no risk of a death spiral. No. And there's no risk that the Obamacare marketplaces in the various states are going to collapse, never mind six already have. No. You don't believe your lying eyes, folks. Don't believe your lying ears. Nope, we're fine. We just need to adjust the system. She said 12.7 million people signed up this year, and 5 million were new customers. And that is the sign of success. I just gave you the actual stats on who is signing up. And the fact that you've signed up that many people who are that high risk is why the system is failing. That's how it works. All right. Quote, you're going to love this. "What brings us the most confidence about the long-term stability and health of the marketplace is its growth." Okay, Miss Cohen. I feel much better about all this now. I mean, a growth in an unacceptably high risk pool of insureds who can't get excuse me, who can't get coverage because no doctor will serve them, and they don't have enough money to buy drugs because the same system has doubled the amount of the drug prices. I just don't think is a sign of success. In fact, I think it's a sign of, lest we say it, dare we say it in the face of this government pronouncement of success? The death spiral. Unbelievable. Let me give you another quote. Given that most carriers have experienced losses in the exchanges, often large losses, it only makes sense that most exchange insurers will request significant rate increases for 2017. This is from Michael Adelberg, another guy. He's a former CMS official, in fact, under President Obama, and left because it was going so badly. He's now a consultant for insurance companies. All right. The Department of Health and Human Services, we're back to the government stance on this, guys. The Human Health and Services argues that the attention on UnitedHealthcare leaving the marketplace is overblown because UnitedHealthcare, the largest insurer in America, the largest insurer of folks who have come in through the Obamacare marketplaces is, I quote, a fairly small player. Of course, these are the same people who brought you the Benghazi video, and you know, I heard about the IRS in the paper, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Blue Cross, a lot of us are on Blue Cross. They may be the key to whether the death spiral is prolonged or the death spiral accelerates, okay? Meaning all sorts of bad things for all of us. If Blue Cross and Blue Shield, they are the backbone, by the way, of the Obamacare marketplaces. They are the backbone. You remove them and all the ribs are unattached. I'm going to quote from an article. I want to give people credit here, and I don't have the title at the top, but I'm going to quote you from this article. There have been some rumblings of discontent from Blue Cross plans. The plan in New Mexico already dropped off the marketplace there last year after it lost money, and state regulators rejected a proposed, listen to this folks, 51.6%, that's 51.6% annual premium increase. I mean, I'm talking about there's some significant suction coming for your wallet. Folks, you better get ready. Now, I'm continuing with a quote from the article. Now, Blue Cross Blue Shield of North Carolina says it might drop out of the marketplace because of its losses and that state's regulatory commission not allowing a 48% increase. In other words, for those of you listening, if you're paying $500 per month, your premium is about to go to $750 per month. Now, you couple that with this next little segment. We are going to have time. Couple that with this next segment as to what's happening with the rise in oil. And we're talking about significant. We're 500, 600, 700, 800, who knows? Depends, you know, what your family structure is, what your financial structure is. We're talking about that much money, spendable cash, disposable income, that is not going to be in your pocket beginning literally over the next 2 to 9 months. You better get ready for it. You know, $500 a month is $6,000 a year. $1,000 a month, obviously, is $12,000 a year. You better be thinking about what's going to happen when you don't have that $6,000, $9,000, $12,000. That you're used to having in your pocket to pay your expenses, pay your mortgages, pay the college tuition for the kids, whatever it happens to be. I mean, getting prepared now is going to be a lot better than kind of trying to chase the, chase the deficit later. Blue Cross of Blue, this I'm going to finish up this segment right now with a great quote. Blue Cross of North Carolina CEO Brad Wilson. Remember, Blue Cross from North Carolina is now thinking about getting out of the exchange. They just had their 48% requested rate increase denied. Blue Cross of North Carolina CEO Brad Wilson, this is an interview he did, said the company had lost $400 million in North Carolina due to its Obamacare business. Now, folks, that's serious money. multiply it by 50 states. Quote, "We're not alone, and I think that is also evidence to suggest there are systemic and fundamental challenges that we all need to have a civilized conversation about." Okay, you can believe the Health and Human Resources and the head of Medicare and Medicaid, all appointed by Obama folks, or you can believe all these think tanks, all these CEOs, all these insurance companies, and all these healthcare apolitical, non-political folks that I just quoted for you. I think I know who you'll believe. Now you need to get prepared. Now, for our final segment here, we're at 50 minutes and 22 seconds. I'm going to talk to you about oil. This is from an article, by the way, from Daily Reckoning. Oil, a tightrope with no safety net. One of the things that they are now discovering, you know, when oil went way, way, way down, it went down to a low of about $26 a barrel in January. It's now up, by the way, to around $45. This is just in 60 days. It has literally almost doubled, almost a 100% increase from its lows in just 60 days. It's still way below what, you know, its peak, which is like 140, 150, 160, but it is rapidly rising. And one of the things that this article brings to light, I found it fascinating, is that the drop in price was really predicated on faulty information by, of course, the government. It was the government who fed out, and a number of the think tanks employed by the government, who fed out the nonsense that there was X amount of oversupply in the marketplace. And everybody, if you remember, blamed it on oversupply. There's too much oil in the marketplace. Increased American production, which led to too much oil in the marketplace. A huge amount of production by Saudi Arabia and OPEC, because they wanted to drive American producers out of business, which led to too much oil in the marketplace, and that's what caused prices to drop. Well, come to find out, that's not really what happened at all. What happened is everybody listened to that siren song for about a month, and prices dropped because of their perception. But when these guys really dig into it, they find that the International Energy Agency, IEA, who came up with all these wild prognostications and estimates of what, of over reserves and all that kind of stuff, they found out that the IEA did not keep track of, could not account for, and misapplied the statistics related to 800,000. Let me repeat that, 800,000 barrels of oil a day. You know how much oil that is? That's like 320 million barrels a year. It is 10% of all the United States production at its peak. It is like 7 or 8% of Saudi Arabia's production. We're talking a huge amount of missing oil. It's just missing. They can't account for it. Huh. 292 million missing barrels of oil, to be exact, last year. This is why it matters. It matters because they have told us that there's this huge oversupply. All the traders heard about it. It drove prices down, and now everybody is realizing the oversupply that the government and the government agencies, international and national, were telling us does not exist. It's all conjured out of thin air, kind of like the employment rate. And the result is prices are going up because you don't have the oversupply that you think you do. Fortune magazine interviewed a number of experts, by the way, also on this in the last 2 or 3 weeks. Here's a quote from one of them. Quote, "If the oversupply has been exaggerated and those barrels don't exist, market analysts say that oil, the oil market could tighten substantially." Substantially. At that time, by the way, oil had tightened up to about $40 a barrel, about a 60% increase. Thursday, this is right at the end of March, There was data that was released. There's an oil services firm by the name of Baker Hughes that keeps very good track of all this stuff. They're apolitical. They're just an oil, you know, here's the stats. You guys figure out what to do with them. Anyway, the Baker Hughes study for the first quarter, U.S. oil drillers cut 15 rigs just in that 1 week, the last week of March. And the United States oil rig count, you need a rig to drill for oil to have more supply, is now 372. It is the lowest number, folks, since 2009. Okay. The IEA, the same outfit that that overforecasts this supply deal, said that U.S. oil production is expected to drop 760,000 barrels a day in 2016 compared to last year. You know, if you put all these things together, the 800,000 missing barrels or misapplied statistical barrels last year per day, you talk about the drop in American energy production of another 760,000 barrels a day. You talk about some type of deal being worked out to at least freeze production by Iran, Saudi Arabia, and Russia, who are trying to get the price of oil. They're trying to walk a tightrope. They want to drive the American producers out of business, but they need to have oil at a certain price to fund their countries because it's their only source of revenue. So they have stopped overproducing. They haven't cut back production, but they're not increasing production, which, by the way, is another million barrels of oil a day. And when you get all kind of said and done here, you're looking at between the drop in American production, the OPEC-Russia deal and Iran deal going on, and the missing 800,000 barrels of misreported oil last year, you're talking about 3 million barrels of oil a day. Now, add in the fact that China and India, let me give you these stats, because their demand for oil is increasing. Okay, China. China's crude imports, you know, importing oil in February 2016 hit another new record, 8 million barrels per day, which was a 20% increase from China's imports in February the year before. Okay? And they expect, there's a Beijing outfit that does all this stuff. I'm not going to bore you with all the details. They expect crude imports to increase 860,000 barrels per day because China is filling its strategic oil reserve in addition to, shall we say, energy funding its stalling economy. Indian oil demand is going up. 300,000 barrels a day it went up in 2015, is expected to do the same in 2016. Now, if you add those two things in, folks, that's another 1.5 million, I'm rounding numbers, barrels of oil a day. You're now up to 4.5 to 5 million barrels of oil a day, more than everybody projected, being used or not existing. It's all the same. If you use it, it doesn't exist. If it doesn't exist, it doesn't exist. The bottom line is there isn't the oversupply everybody thought, and the oversupply that is there, much smaller, is being used far more rapidly than any of these people forecast. That's the bottom line. 5 million barrels a day is almost 1.5 trillion barrels a year. That is huge. You better get ready to pay a lot more for oil and a lot more for your health care. And you better figure out where you're going to get the shekels to keep the rest of your life going. Not that the government really cares. I am out of time. I unfortunately don't have time to go into the two professors or the American Thinker excerpt I wanted to read you. I will do that next week. Thank you for your patience over the last 2 weeks. I am tickled to bring you the show this week. And we got some corkers coming up for you. In fact, our next installment on the United States government funding terrorism using your tax dollars through the various MAS, the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Interior, and other in sundry, and shall we say, treasonous avenues of funding for our enemies, fully endorsed by our, and I'll be kind again, Muslim Sympathizing Administration. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next Saturday.